Hello and welcome to Fueling Around with me, Jason Plato, and the man that relights my fire on a weekly basis. It's Dave Vitti.
Hello.
Fueling Around is powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, how are you, pal?
I'm very good. And yourself?
Yep, mate, not bad. Although it's getting cold, isn't it? And rainy and windy.
It's getting really cold. Do you know what? Honest truth is I hardly slept last night because it was that cold. Now, if we were on stage, everyone would kind of go, "Ah!" But no, generally...
I'm not sure they would.
I could hardly sleep. I was freezing. I don't like the winter. But anyway, listen, we can warm up the cockles of our hearts today with our special guest who we've been looking forward to speaking to on this podcast for a very long time.
Indeed, we have. Now, our guest today is a gentleman who's been one of the biggest British pop stars of the last 30 years. He used to make up exactly one-fifth of the biggest boy band in the world before becoming a quarter and now a third. It is, of course, the one and only Mr. Howard Donald. Hi, mate. Hey. How are you?
Yeah, good. First, let me start by saying congratulations on your amazing career, Jason.
Oh, yeah. That's very kind.
Yes. In fact, we haven't done this yet. I think a round of applause.
No, I mean, I can't clap my hands because I'm holding the phone with one hand. Yes, I was there in the early 90s watching you at Alton Park when you was partnered with Menu.
Yeah, yeah.
In the and you was in the Renault.
Yeah, were you really?
The Laguna.
I was there watching you and touring cars. That's how long I've been into touring cars.
Good God. Well, do you know what? We've known each other, you know, for a wee while, but I didn't know that. I didn't know you know, it all went back to, well, 97.
Yes. Oh, yes. Wow. It was in 97 that then.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was there. And at the same time when Ferret Face was in the Ford Mondeo.
Ferret Face, I love that. That is obviously the one and only, the lion, Ilioni Matt Mansell.
Yes.
Was that always your favourite motorsport then, Howard? Was it touring cars that did it for you?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, my dad, every Sunday, we used to always watch Formula One when racing cars were racing cars.
Yeah.
When they made a noise. And that's kind of what I was into, Formula One. And then when things changed and they went to turbo, I sort of,
yeah.
I don't know. I sort of went off it a little bit. I think, you know, as much as I love Hamilton, you know, I think Button was probably one of my favourites from the F1 era, or the British drivers anyway.
Do you know what? I felt exactly the same. When the noise went, it lost something, didn't it? And you know, there's that great quote, "We sell noise."
Mm. Yeah, the noise. I mean, racing cars need to make a noise.
You see, for me, it was also to do with just the way, we've said this a few times, Jason, haven't we? Just the way that they look, because the reason I've always liked touring cars, and you know, never in my wildest dreams did I think that I'd be sat here, you know, on a podcast with you two talking about touring cars. But it's just the fact that they look like proper cars, you know. Yeah. When I was a kid watching those, is that I just, and I still to this day, I think, find that Formula One cars are just not, they're not as real. Whereas, you know, you've got cars that look like cars that actually, you know, bash up against each other like cars. And it was just all a bit more real and more human.
Well, they're not touchable, are they? Whereas touring cars, you can have the dream and thinking, oh, yeah, one day I could have that Renault. I could have that Mondeo. Yeah. I could put some wide wheels in it. I could mold the suspension on it. And it's the same with Le Mans. I absolutely adore Le Mans. You know, obviously, 24-hour Le Mans, whether it's classic or the modern one, because the cars, the more reachable, especially when you're talking like the GT3s and the RSRs and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. It's more sort of there. You have this dream that, oh God, maybe one day I might have one of those cars.
Absolutely. You know, and I've got that, you know, I love Le Mans. I mean, you mentioned the RSR. I'm trying to put, you know, I've had a few chats with a couple of pals of mine and we're trying to get an entry in a semi-works RSR, where we can go and obviously take it seriously, but actually do it slightly differently to all the other motorsport I've done, where, you know, we're there to enjoy ourselves and to take the atmosphere in. Obviously, we'll be serious in the car, but do you know what? It's not life or death.
Sure.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to trying to see if I can make that happen, because it's, I mean, you must have been out there to watch, eh?
I love it. I've been there. Well, I've not been there that many times. I've been there twice to Le Mans 24-hour, and I've been there about three times for the classic
Le
Mans, which I love. And I've had my car I've done a couple of demo laps in my GT2 round Le Mans.
Which have is, you?
Yeah, wow. which is the I can't remember, endurance I think it's called, and they have certain categories from cars from say 95 up to 2005, and
yeah,
you're literally driving down the straight, and you got the bloody Bentley. That's the Bentley zooming past. You think, Jesus Christ!
Yeah.
I remember watching that in 2000, 2001. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's some piece of road, isn't it?
Oh man, amazing. You're never going to learn it, though, are you? Like going around doing six demonstration laps in your GT2.
You see, I've never been. Still to this day, I've never been to Le Mans, and it's on my bucket list. Yeah, I've never been. And actually, we keep saying that actually we need to work out a reason to be there. In fact, well, maybe we don't need a reason. Maybe we
don't need a reason. You've got to go
next year. Yeah, we should.
You've got to do it there. It's the atmosphere is awesome. Like something else, isn't it?
Awesome. Yeah.
And actually, there's a really passionate Brit crowd which go. I mean, I reckon probably half of the people there are Brits.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's a festival atmosphere, isn't it? You know, in as much as I guess, you know, the music of a festival is replaced by everybody's mutual. Well, there's music there as well, isn't there? As well as obviously the motorsport.
Oh, everything. Absolutely everything. Big screens everywhere. I remember I was there the year when England beat Germany 5-1. What year was that? 2000, 2001?
2001 it was.
Right, so that's when I was there, and there were screens up everywhere, everyone just drinking.
Yeah,
Big stag do's and people camping out around the side with campfires. And I've never done the Nürburgring, but apparently that's supposed to be very special as well, doing the Nürburgring.
The 24-hour?
Yeah, 24-hour.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, smell of bratwurst everywhere. Oh, and obviously, don't forget the sauerkraut.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely. Yeah. So where did you two, I mean, obviously, your paths have crossed in various motorsport ways. Where did you first two meet? Or where did you two first meet, rather, would be the right way of saying it?
Goodwood, you reckon?
Yeah, Goodwood. I reckon it was Goodwood, yeah.
Revival.
Yeah, Revival. And I remember you asking me back then, could you do this podcast?
Did I?
And I thought, oh, yeah, lying bastard. He hasn't got a podcast. you was asking back then. Rob Huff, he was with, nice guy as well.
And he's lovely, isn't he?
It looks like you two get on like hours on fire, your sort of sense of humour.
We were teammates in 2003 at Seat. 2004. He won... Seat had a one make championship, the Seat Cupras, and I was like the driver mentor. Did their TV show with Nell McCander, actually. God, she was fit. and no is the answer.
No,
despite trying, it was definitely a no.
Oh, 100% no.
Yeah, and basically, you know, the winner of that one make series then became my teammate for 2004. And originally we were meant to be racing in the European Touring Car Championship. And I'd convinced Seat that, do you know what? They should, I think whoever wins should share my flat in Monaco. That's a good prize, obviously trying to get them to pay for it. And they did.
Have you got a flat in Monaco?
I used to have, yeah. You used to
wow.
have for 4 years, and I managed to get Seat to pay for it. Anyway, I got Huffy down when he won. He won the championship, and my plan was to get him down there and take him to the most expensive places I could find, and therefore he'd never want to come back again. And that's exactly what happened. But yeah, he's a lovely lad, his Huff.
Yeah,
I tell you what, tasty driver as well.
Oh yeah, he is, and especially in those Jaguars, those classics. So he's a great driver.
So Howard, then, so have cars always been a thing for you? I mean, you said about, you know, watching the Formula One with your dad when you were little. I mean, do you remember being into cars as a little boy? Do you remember the cars that your parents had? You know, what are your earliest memories?
It's funny because all my dad's cars were obviously sheds, and he obviously couldn't afford nice cars. You know, he had his VW Beetle, he had his Ford Granada. And I think when I first started work as a vehicle painter, I used to see a lot of cars, and there was a lot of Jaguar E-type shells that I used to do up as well. And at that moment in time, I didn't really get the gist of what it actually was. I knew it was a Jaguar. I didn't really get out of the value of it. I mean, guessing back then in the mid 80s, the value wasn't quite the same as what they are now. But I sort of had, I was so into cars back then, but not massively, where I was a poster boy, where I'd have the F40 up on the wall and stuff like that. I was more into my BMXing and breakdancing than cars. And I think started with girls quite late as well, to be honest with you, because of BMXing and dancing. So cars was...
Were you dancing on the streets of Droylsden? How?
I was in the precinct in Ashton-under-Lyne. Having challenges with different people. So, yeah, I was probably a late start when it comes to cars, whereas, you know, you hear some people saying, oh, yeah, it's been my poster car forever. Yeah. And I think once I started earning money with Take That, I used to always look at the, which is what I've got now, I used to always look at the, like, 560 SEC, like the Mercedes, like the 1989, 1987 up to 91, 92. And I used to always look at it and think, God, I'd love one of those. That was kind of my dream car. It was more like a limo sort of car. But now I've got one. It's probably, funnily enough, out of all the cars I've got, it's probably one of my favourite cars, one of the smoothest cars, one of the cheapest cars, and it's Mercedes. It's reliable as hell.
Yeah.
Are you someone that finds it difficult to part with cars? I mean, you know, obviously your success with Take That over the last 30 years, can you believe it's 30 years, you know, has obviously afforded you your lifestyle and in turn afforded you the opportunity to indulge your passion in cars.
Yeah.
Is it a collection that just grows and grows and grows, or are you one of those people that can kind of go, do you know what, I'm going to chop that in and I'm going to use that to then buy something? How does it work?
Well, it's kind of come to the point where I don't have any more room. So it's, it's one of those now where you have to swap and change. Now, to get a new engine for that car, I need to sell that car there.
Right.
Or to get the arches done on that car, I need to sell that car to get this and get that and get that. So I'm sort of like, I do look in the garage and I think, right, which is the first one I would sell near if push comes to shove?
Yeah. That's a tough one, though, isn't it? It's like picking your least favourite child.
I know. and I always see them as, well, even the best cars that I've got, I always see them as not my car, because I know that one day I feel like I'm looking after them to pass down to somebody else, or somebody, you know, somebody who's going to buy it in 2 years, 5 years time, and then it becomes their car, because you know, one day it'll come to the crunch where Take That might stop, probably will stop eventually, and then you think, well, I've got another 5 years left of possibly private education to put my kids into school. Now how the hell am I going to afford that if I'm not earning anything? So I'm going to have to sell one of my cars.
So I really hate my
kids for that, though. You know that.
So what's first on the list? What do you think? Right, that one's got to go at some point. Well, and then obviously then I'm going to ask you what's last on the list.
I've got a Chevrolet Brookwood, which is 1959. It's a massive thing. It's like a tank. And I think the American cars, because I've just got rid of a Mustang, a 1967 Mustang. As much as I love the noise of it and the, you know, the sound of it, they drive a little bit like shit, to be honest with you. I was actually in my, I've got a 1959 Cadillac Coupe de Ville, which is amazing. It's got a lot of the air suspension on it.
Yeah.
It's not one of those that bounce up and down to hip-hop music. But I did a charity ride. Somebody gave money for charity for the school, the local school. And I took it on, and I was joking the day before, thinking, no, I was joking with the person that organized it, saying, oh, we're on the way there and we've broken down, and, you know, I'm going to have to call the AA. And literally was only joking about this. And I got them to the restaurant, which was in Chichester.
Yeah.
And then I picked them up 2 hours later. On the way back, my temperature gauge went off the scale, and my car started slowing down. And eventually cut off right near Goodwood in all those went windy country roads. And I was on a really dangerous corner. And my bloody engine seized on the on the Cadillac. And I was like flabbergasted, thinking, I should not have said that, because I've just manifested this car breaking down. And I feel so embarrassed that I've broken down with these two people in the car that I've paid quite a lot of money to have a ride in this car. And it was terrible, you know, the AM to get a flatbed, blocking the road off. I was like trying to hide, hoping no one would recognize me.
How funny is that? Awkward, eh?
But I've decided now to get a modern American engine in it, like an LS3 or an LS4, just something that's reliable. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you've got all the aesthetic beauty of the old car, but actually something that's a bit more reliable is going to break down.
Yeah, and I love it. I do love it as a car. I mean, they definitely made beautiful looking cars in the '50s, the Americans. But I mean, the great in straight lines, but going around corners, I mean, you've got to be careful.
Yeah. Well, do you know what I drive? Pal of mine, I drive his big block Stingray. Good.
That's right. Yeah.
The white and blue stripe one. Honest to God, it's the scariest thing.
I bet it is.
I kid you not. And I try not to do Goodwood every year because I want it to be special rather than just something I just do all the time. And every time I get in it, I'm not happy. Until I've done 4 or 5 laps. I'm like, calm down, JP, calm down. Yeah, they're proper. I mean, they just don't turn and they don't
stop. I
think
if you can drive one of them, you can drive anything.
Do you find, Jason, when you've been racing that, do you come out feeling exhausted, almost like a proper workout? Because presumably just the weight of the whole thing must be a completely different experience to driving what you're used to driving touring car-wise.
Yeah, do you know what? You've used every bit of everything in your head.
Yeah.
You know, they're quite emotional to drive because they're basically trying to kill you.
Yeah.
And like you say, they're heavy. You know, no power steering. But... do you know what? You feel good when you're back safe and you can look back at the video and go, Jesus Christ. Yeah. And there, you know, there are a handful, but it's a great experience.
Have you driven a Cobra, Jason?
No, I've not raced one, but I've tested one. Yeah, they're good fun because they're a bit lighter.
Yeah, they're a lot scary as well. Yeah,
I mean, you need to be, you know, you need to give those sorts of cars quite a lot of respect.
Yeah, I take to box because I actually drove at the I raced at the Goodwood Revival in my little Pre-A 1953 356.
Right. Yes, we did you?
Yeah. Yes, and funnily enough, I came off in qualifying at No Name, scraped all down one side, which is really embarrassing. It was one of those moments where you crash it and you think, I'm never racing again. I'm never racing. I'm never ever doing this ever again. Because you feel so embarrassed. You feel such a novice. Even though I've always wanted to drive a Goodwood, I was absolutely shitting myself doing it. But then they patched it up. But fun. The race the next day, I had to retire it 5 minutes before the end because the chassis had bent and oil was leaking out the engine. So
you're joking.
And 20 grand later, after the respray and getting the chassis all put, I mean, it's like. Motorsport is
not cheap, is it?
Expensive. It's so expensive.
And that's not a place to go off at No Name.
No.
That's not the corner to go off. Oh, yeah, it is a scary track, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a great track.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's where Sterling basically lost his career at No Name. Wow. That's where he had his massive accident. Old Sterling Moss, God bless him.
But that's where I lost 20 grand. Which one's worse?
So Howard, what does the car collection look like today in terms of numbers, and what have you got, if you're allowed to say?
Probably around 17.
Okay.
Probably around 17. I think when you look at somebody like Jamiroquai or anybody else.
Yeah, I've been to his house and that's mad.
I would say mine's like a little handful, if you like. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous when I think about it, even 17. And there's places, there's cars at other people's places. There's one at Andrew Jordan's, a Lotus Cortina. There's a GT2 at Lee Maxted Pages, who's a great Porsche. Yeah. Specialist in historic cars. And it's come to the point where you're trying to put them in other people's garages and you're thinking, no, it's too ridiculous, because what you want is them under all under one roof.
Yes.
Yeah.
To look
at
them.
Yeah.
And not be crammed. The problem is where I am is I've got all these cars crammed up. So if I want to get the one out the corner,
you've got to move them all.
6 cars.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous.
Be honest, does Mrs. Donald know exactly how many cars you've got?
That smile says everything.
And listen, she realistically probably won't listen to this, so you can tell us and it won't go any further. Does she know that there's 17?
I've had, you know, there's been a point where, you know, you know, I've got like this orange RSR, and I've brought it out, and the noise of it is like just open exhaust. So it's one of those things where you have to be super careful going around country roads, because, you know, if there's a horse around the corner,
you're
going to scare the ass of it, and it's going to bolt with the person on it. So you have to be super careful. I remember pulling that out. She went, "Oh, this is a nice one. When did you get this one?" I said, "Do you not remember? I told you that I got this one, you know, a couple of weeks back." So, you have to be super careful. And, you know, and like I say, it's one of those, when you think of the cars, it becomes ridiculous. And you think at some point you've got to actually like take it down. Yeah. Take it down, put the money away, stop buying them. But the problem is, I love cars.
Yeah.
I just love cars so much. And
so what's on the radar then? What have you got your eye on?
Well, there is a Mercedes 600. I love the Mercedes 600 Pullman.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's a cracker. I love anything that's race legal and road legal at the same time. Like, I've got the 356 is race legal and is a race car, basically, and is road legal. Same with the RSR. And I used to have a 911 2-litre 1965, which, funnily enough, Chris Harris drove at Goodwood a couple of times. And I sold it. And it's one of the cars that I actually look back on and think,
aggressive.
Sold it. Even though they're not really going... It's not about value, really, because I've never really bought a car thinking, I'm buying this car because I know that in 5 years' time, this is going to be proper winner. It's going to be a proper investment. Yeah. I've never, ever done that. And it was the same with the 2-litre Porsche. I sold it. I used to drive it all around Europe because I've got a place in Germany where my daughter lives. And then when I sold it, I thought, oh, no. And the only reason I sold it was because they have a 2-litre Porsche 911 race series, which I raced in at Spa with Dickie Meaden. And the problem is, everyone's upgrading their engines, and then there's a new engine coming out, and then these engines are a little bit touchy, and, you know, it costs you another 75 grand to get a new engine for this Porsche.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, I don't want that. I still want something I can drive on the road without it feeling like, you know, without feeling like every little bump, I'm going to get a headache. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I decided I didn't want to go down that route. So I was never, ever going to have a competitive car, even though I'm a novice. And I know that I'm never, ever going to be a good racing driver, if you know what I mean, because it's, I don't think I have the nerve. You know what I mean? Because it's so scary. It's so scary. I'm at a couple of the starts in HRDC in my Lotus Cortina. I've raced with Andrew Jordan a few times. And he shared the car with me. And because I've been so nervous, I've never got off the starting grid properly. Oh, I've never got the wheels spinning. Yeah. I've sort of started and it's gone.
Mate, we've all been there. We've all done it.
It is a weird feeling when you do. I mean, I've done bits of track days and stuff like that before, but it is that thing about actually having the bottle where you have to overcome the fact that you are sometimes scared that you might really hurt yourself. You know, it's a weird one, because I don't ever get it in karting. And I think that's why I enjoy karting so much, because I don't ever drive with that inhibition of sort of pulling back a little bit, because I always drive literally as fast as I possibly can, right on the limit with karting. But I think in a real car, I'm always slightly back from that, like, you know, no more than about 80%, because I'm always worried about getting it spectacularly wrong and flipping or something like that.
There's also, right, when I got this car from JRT, Jordan Racing, this Cortina is like pristine, this Lotus Cortina, and the paintworks are made. You would have seen it, Jason. You would have seen the car.
Yes, I know the car. Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah,
and it's like, I was so nervous of people smashing into me, because I was thinking, if I had the money to, I mean, because I still value things, and I'm not one of these persons that just does that with money and thinking, oh, buy that. I don't give a shit if I smash that up. I'm so worried about smashing up, thinking, well, if I smash this up, not only does it cost me blah, blah, blah to enter into this race, to get the transport, to get the car pre-prepped, then post-prepped. Yeah. And then all of a sudden I'll smash the car up and it's going to cost me another 10 grand. I'm thinking, How long can you actually sustain this for unless you've actually got this mega million-pound business where you can just keep going out on weekends and throwing your cars around? There's guys in the HRDC that are throwing the cars around and don't give a shit whether they get them smashed up. And I'm thinking, well, no, that's not me. That's why I'll never be a competitive racer in my own cars.
Yeah, and also they're lovely bits of kit, aren't they? They don't need to be banged up. They just certainly don't. I mean, it amazes me, you know, the big TT race at the Revival. God, if you added up the whole grid, I mean, it's frightening amounts of money. Yeah. You know, 100, probably getting on for 50 million quid's worth, I would think, are on that grid.
Crazy.
And they're driving like fruitcakes.
Yeah, and they get the pros, don't they, like yourself, to actually race their cars as well, to give their car a bit more of a name as well, I guess, don't they?
Yeah, prominence, yeah.
Quite the opposite from having done the Silverstone Classic a few years ago, where they get a load of, you know, minor celebrities that like cars to then drive. And listen, I know your opinion on Morgan's, Jason, and let's not cloud this lovely story with that, but... There was all these beautiful cars, all pristine, and they were all privately owned, right? Yeah. So what they'd done for previous years for like the celebrity races, they'd got a Baths and stuff like that, and Fiat had come down with a truck full of them, and off they go, you know. Or I think they'd done it with Corsa VXRs and stuff like that, which are fine because, you know, they're all kind of like fleet cars and stuff. But these are all privately owned Morgans. They're polished every weekend, and so they were then handing them over, you know, and two of them got completely written off. Yeah. And Brendan Cole put it straight into a bloody post on one of the corners. Yeah. Luther Blissett flipped his three times. Yeah. Was lucky to get out alive. God. You know,
that was my first ever race, Silverstone Classic, in one of the worst cars I've ever driven, which is an A35.
Did you do that?
Yeah. I absolutely hated it. I hated it. You know, it's one of those because it's got the what's it called, where you take one of the wheels up and it goes and builds back up again the speed.
They've got weird diffs, haven't they?
Yeah, and there was literally about there was about three cars that tipped him over on the roof.
Well, do you know what? Just turning, those things flip over, don't they? Turn the wheel, horrible. They can go over.
Horrible cars.
I'll let you into a little secret. They asked me, there was an A35 race at Goodwood, and they wanted me to do it. And do you know what? I pretended I was not available. I just didn't want to do it.
You fancy it?
No, because literally they go over.
Yeah,
they literally roll over so easily. And I think Karun jumped in the car. Karun Chandok jumped in the car that I was going to race, and he ended up on his roof.
Oh my God. Yeah, and like you say, Dave, the privately owned cars.
Yeah.
You're going past these cars that are on the roof with doors that have fallen off.
I know.
You're thinking, oh my God, poor bloody owner.
But you've got the owners.
I wasn't thinking about the person inside the car.
Poor owner. Absolutely. You know, and you see them. And I mean, at one point, I remember I was stood next to this owner as their pride and joy was coming across the outside the pits on a crane. And was completely trashed on the front. And I just saw, and they're kind of pretending it's okay and sort of, oh, well, you know, this is all part of the day out. And inside, you're just thinking, you must be gutted. It's like a member of the family.
Of course.
And mate, there's nothing more special than a Morgan owner.
Well, they are different people.
They
are
really.
This is possibly an edit point.
They are absolute fruitcakes.
Oh my God! I think I might have seen that race you were talking about, Dave. Those Morgans flipping over and
honestly,
people crashing them, and
I was behind Luther when he did it, and I was two behind Luther when he did it, and it was funny actually because we just started. And then we all got taken back in for, you know, another safety briefing. And everybody was sat in there a bit like, I don't want to do it anymore.
What was that? Like, yes, another safety briefing.
And everyone's in there kind of going, I don't want to do it anymore. Because then suddenly just the realization that actually this can be quite dangerous sort of hit everybody. And genuinely, you know, joking. I mean, Luther laughs about it now, but he was lucky to get out of that, you know. Yeah. And he had, I mean, his head hit the floor. I mean, he had all scrape marks on his helmet from Christ. The tarmac because it went over three times, I think.
That's why I don't understand those. What are those cars called, Jason? Those big, like, there's a Fiat Beast of Turin, isn't he? And they've got that race at Goodwood.
Yes.
And they're going around like hell for leather, and they've got no structure behind their heads.
Yeah. And no seatbelts.
If their car turns over, the weight of those cars, the full weight on top of them, the Gonskis.
I'd be gone, are you familiar with the Beast of Turin, Dave?
I'm not, no. I mean, I've got an image about what you're talking about in so much as just some massive great thing with no protection whatsoever. But
I mean, it's literally, I mean, it's from like 1920s, I think. Right. I mean, search up on the internet when you get time. Unbelievable. It's something
fired,
like 30 liter or something ridiculous.
So it's got an engine in it, a bit like a, I don't know, like a Hurricane jet or something like that. You know?
Yeah, like out of a Lancaster bomber.
Ridiculous things.
Hey, here's a question for you, Howie. Electric cars. Where do you stand on them?
I don't like them.
Next question.
Yeah, perfect.
No, I don't like him. I don't believe any car is green, especially an electric car, because it's because to power the people, things that charge them. You need oil. I get the fumes and everything like that, but I just think it's unrealistic of the old world being electric, and now they're talking about taxing electric cars, and I'm guessing the electric now is going to go up in price tenfold when everyone's got them. So people think they're going to be cheaper to run, but they're actually not. So I've never driven one, so I can't tell you. I've heard they're obviously rapid. I can't really say how good the drive is, but I just soulless.
You've hit the nail on the head. They are very clinical. I mean, they're great at what, you know, I mean, if you do ever get to drive one, have a go in the Porsche Taycan, because that's quite something. But it's still a bit soulless compared to a combustion engine car.
I just love the sound of engines. I just love the sound. It'd be a massive shame if all of a sudden combustion engines disappear. But, you know,
your show that you do, Fifth Gear. Do you still do that?
Series coming out soon.
I remember watching you in the Pagani Zonda.
Oh yeah, mate. I remember watching you in that,
and that inspired me to try and get one. This was back then, and I went to the Pagani factory to meet him.
Yeah, he's a cool dude, isn't he?
Oh, he is. He's lovely. Yeah. And he has his interpreter, doesn't he?
Yeah.
The Argentinian guy, I think. And the car I was after, what was for sale, was a Zonda R.
Wow.
And I don't know how many of those they made, but they didn't make very many, did they? And it was for sale, and I saw the price of it, and I thought, oh, God, I don't know what to do. I really don't know what to do. And he took us out, wined and dined us for lunch, took us around the factory and showed us how everything was made, which is incredible attention to detail.
That's beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, it's beautiful. And the Zonda R. And I thought, I scratched my head and I thought, how many times can I actually use this car? It's not even a road car, even on race circuits now, because race circuits now are restricted and noise limited, whereas probably 10 years ago, there was a lot more unlimited noise on these circuits. And now it's getting like, neighbours are complaining and they don't want any noise around their circuit, even though they just bought a brand new house right next to the circuit.
It's a big problem, actually.
And so far, how many times am I actually going to use this car? Not very many times. It just looks amazing. Yeah. So I ended up going for the Porsche 962. I got a Porsche 962.
Okay.
Yeah, brilliant.
I didn't get to use that as well. I didn't get to use that car. But I remember somebody who took us to the Pagani factory saying, do you know actually how much that Zonda R is worth now?
Fortunes, I would imagine.
It's worth now. Whereas the 962 is like a real steady, slow climber, because they had the Group C racing, didn't they? They introduced. Yes.
Where have you driven the 962?
I haven't.
Have you not driven it?
No. The problem is I bought it and it needed crack testing. And to get it crack tested was going to be $100 to $150,000 to get this car crack tested.
What, to get the chassis all crack tested?
Well, you do just everything, yeah. And I thought, well, it's never going to happen. I'm never going to be racing it in Group C against the big boys. And I know you have to go around corners in that pretty fast, don't you? Because it works, it pulls it down, doesn't it? The
Yeah, it's a downforce car. It's got a tunnel car, so the faster you go, the more grip you get.
I mean, beautiful car, but I just it's used no ornament to me, this car. I can look at it all day long, but I can't. So I had to get a shot.
Ah, but you've got to drive it, so you've got to have a go at it at least.
I know. I'll have to have a go. Whoever's bought it, I'll have to find him and have a little go.
Absolutely. Take me out. I've got a question for you, Howard, which is impossible, I suspect, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Of all the vehicles you've ever owned, right, to this day, you need to pick one and one only and stick with it for the rest of your life. This is your one car in the world, and it has to do everything that you need it to do. Which one is it and why?
I was going to say the GT40, but that's like pressing your foot on a barn door on the club, so that's cracking traffic. I'm going to go for my first ever classic car, which is a Mercedes 280 SE convertible, 3.5, because that has taken me all around Europe with my wife, come rain or shine, never missed a beat. And it's just glorious to look at. And it's great in the summer. You can put the kids in the back. It's got seat belts in there. And it was my first ever car when I was 30 years old. So
is that right?
My
really
first ever
pretty
classic
car.
Although before that, when I first started off in, say that, I had a 355. I had a silver 355. And I just didn't give a shit about it. I don't know why, what it was. Because back then when I bought it, it wasn't a classic.
Yeah.
Whereas now it is. I just didn't care about it. You know, I'd leave it outside or leaves would get in the engine. And when I sold it back to Ferrari in Cheshire, they thought, what the hell? Where have you kept this car? It's like all rain in the engine bay. And it's like, oh my God, I didn't realize you had to look after them.
Mate, I've got a question for you. So two car fantasy garage. You have whatever you like.
Yeah.
I guess a Pagani's in there, is it?
No, it's not actually. Not a Pagani. I've got one of them. It's a Gullwing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what, 300?
300 SL. It's not the Scott car in the world. Yet, it's the SL. That's one of them. And I would say a wide body Mercedes AMG 600, which is basically like the 560. SEC.
Yeah.
I think it's a 6-liter AMG, which is a wide body, and I think there's only about 130 of them in the world. I think, I don't know the numbers, but again, it's one of those cars where, you know, when I used to love the SEC when I first started to take that, I would look at that car thinking, oh God, I wish it was a bit wider. Then this wide body came along, and I thought, God, that is the dream car. And that would take me anywhere. That would take me anywhere around Europe as far as you want to go.
Yeah.
300,000 miles in a Mercedes any day of the week.
And talking of go anywhere cars, here's the question for you then. Myself and JP always think that music and motoring go well together, Howard. So we need your fantasy drive, please. Where are you? Where are you going? What are you listening to? And most importantly, what are you in?
Oh, my God. I wish I would have been sent these questions before.
Where's the fun in that?
I've got to think about that one now, haven't I?
That's right, we've got time.
Okay.
I mean, I guess you're not listening to Take That, I guess.
No. Well, normally the cars that you drive around in, especially if the historic, which is normally what I would drive around in rather than a modern one, they normally have tape machines or they don't have, or they just have a radio.
Yeah.
So I would say maybe driving on that amazing B road that goes north Scotland, because it's one of my bucket list things, doing all those B roads going to the north of Scotland.
Yeah.
Great weather, radio on, probably listen to maybe Chemical Brothers or something.
Nice.
Wicked.
Yeah, something like that. In like a speedster, Porsche speedster.
Oh, does it get any better?
That's great.
I want to do that. I want to do that North Coast 500 at some point. I want to go right up that. I mean, that looks like a superb trip, doesn't it?
I'd love to do that. I really love to do that. I think you definitely need a week, but to have 2 weeks, you're going to have a lot of time to stop off, do what you want to do, visit people or whatever. That'd be great.
Yeah,
absolutely. We should try and engineer that as something to do. I don't really know why or how, but why not?
That needs a bit of thought, Dave, I reckon.
I think it does. I think it does. Before we go, Howard, take that plans for next year. What's happening? Where can we see you? What are the plans?
We have a film coming out called Greatest Days, which is a proper film about the fans, about five fans, their love of the band in the early days into the later days, starring Ashley Beer. Ashling, I think she's called. I think that's how you pronounce it. And that's coming out in May or June. We're also doing Hyde Park, British Summertime, on the 1st of July. And we have an album coming out at the end of next year. So we're writing it now.
Right.
And the tour will be in 24, so which is already
already
booked and planned. Which is kind of how you got to do it nowadays. You got to book arenas and stadiums.
Does that mean then that the bulk of next year will be spent in the studio then for you?
Yeah, the bulk will be a lot. You know, we'll probably be in LA in January, New York in February, and a lot of stuff doing it here as well, depending on which producer we decide to pick and which route we go down, as in music style. And then a lot of it will be promo for the album come the end of next year.
Because I can imagine doing like a tour. I'm just imagining now, the set build alone must be months and months and months, or even before that, to design all that. That's a big process, I guess.
Well, we're talking about it now, to actually sort of... I mean, they don't want answers now, but for 24. But you actually have to start... getting your designs together and then get the people in place. And the great thing about us is we've normally used a lot of the same people going back to the 90s, the same companies, truck companies, and you know, people who build the stage builders. And we know we've got a great, amazing team, amazing band. So yeah, these are planned way in advance. And I think the thing is with us as well, we always put a lot of money. We invest into the production of our shows, spend a lot of money, and because we really want people to, you know, go home with a massive smile on the face and say, what a great show, what great value for money, and don't rip them off. And we know what it's like in these times, you know, the cost of living is like ridiculous. That's why it's always difficult talking about cars, you know what I mean? Like these are proper luxuries in our life. And you know, I think myself very, very fortunate and lucky, but although I have worked my ass off for the last 30 years to get here, but I know that one day they won't be my car, so I'm just gonna milk it for all it's got, and you know, enjoying them as much as I can, you know.
Absolutely, as the current day custodian. And on that note, Jason, I think you need to take us out.
Well, unfortunately, we've got to wrap this up. So that is it for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux. As the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help you save money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance. Dave, as always, huge thanks. But massive thanks this week to our very special guest, the one and only Mr. Howard Donald. Thanks, pal.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a lot.
No, superb that, Howard. Great to have you on. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter at Jason Plato or at David Vitti. And if you like what you've heard, feel free to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share the podcast on all your socials.
Thanks for listening, guys and girls, and we'll catch you next time. Cheers.